Okay, we're on page 672. We're going to start Pasuk Dalid, which says Lo Yitame Bal Ba'amav. Okay, basically we were discussing why the Torah says warn the adults on the kids by these three mitzvahs. We're discussing who a kohen could become tamei to, could become impure for his wife, mother, father, son, daughter, brother, and a single sister that was never married. Once the sister is married, a kohen cannot become tamei for her. Then it says like this: Lo yitame bal ba'amav. A husband cannot become contaminated. Obviously, a kohen husband cannot become contaminated leheichalut to one who desecrates him. Meaning, if a kohen married a woman he was not allowed to marry, like he married, let's say, a divorcee, and then the divorcee died, so even though it's his wife, but because it's a wife that desecrated him from being a kohen, so he does not impurify himself for her. And to discussing this, I mean, we're going to get soon in the relationships that a kohen is allowed to marry and not marry. There are certain relationships the Torah forbid, and the Torah says it's completely invalid. It's completely worthless. For instance, if a brother would come over to a sister in front of two witnesses, give her a ring or kedushin money, and say to her, you are consecrated to me with this ring according to the law of the Moshe in Yisrael, it is absolutely worthless. She is not a married woman. She's completely single as it was before. It's completely worthless. Any forbidden relations or relationship which is punishable by death, by kodis, or if it was intentional, chenek, or any of the other capital punishments, the din is the kedushin is totally invalid. Okay? You can come in.
Yeah. I am.
Good. Now, there's certain relationships the Torah forbids, but if the kedushin is done, it's valid. For instance, a kohen cannot marry a divorcee. If a kohen comes over to a divorcee in front of two witnesses, gives her a ring, and says, "At mikdash yosi b'tabazu kadas moshe v'yisrael," she becomes a married woman. She's a full-fledged Ashes ish. He has an obligation to divorce her. He's not allowed to stay married to her. He has to divorce her, because a kohen cannot marry a divorcee. But until he divorces her, she is considered a full-fledged Ashes ish. That if somebody commits adultery with her, they get killed. The Torah is saying over here that if a kohen marries a woman that desecrates him from being a kohen, meaning he marries a woman that a kohen is not allowed to marry, that we'll soon learn which women a kohen is not allowed to marry. So the din is, because, so one might think it's still his wife, and a kohen could become tamei for his wife, because halachically, it's his wife, she needs a get from him. The fact that she desecrated him from being a kohen, because he married her, and he's not allowed to marry her, he does not become tamei for her. He cannot go to her funeral and anything like that. That's what the pasuk is saying clearly. Lo yitame bal ba'amav. A husband cannot become kantame for his wife. Leheichale to the one that is mechalal him, meaning one that desecrates him. So this pasuk is really explaining the pasuk before. Even though for a wife you could become tame, but only if it's a kosher wife, not a wife that you're not allowed to marry. And then the Torah says like this. The next mitzvah, even though this mitzvah that we're learning now applies to all Jews, but the Torah says it explicitly by Kainim Olsunsi. Le'yikruchu karcha bereisham. In the olden times, as a custom, if somebody died, they used to rip out their hair and make bald spots. That's what they used to do. As a goyisha, darkei ameir, the goyim, the idol worshippers, used to rip out their hair and make bald spots for somebody that died. Or they would cut off their payas of their head. Or they would make scratches on their skin. So all these things the Torah forbids. They cannot make a bald spot on their heads. They're not allowed to shave the edge of their beard, with obviously with a razor. And in their flesh, La yisru tu sarates, they cannot cut a gash. This is all biblically forbidden when it's done for a dead person. Now the din is, even though this din applies to all Jews, not only to Kohanim, so why does the Torah say it over here? Because the Torah is teaching us, even Kohanim cannot do it. Why? Why would I think Kohanim could do it, even though no Jew is allowed to do it? Because I would think the fact that the Kohen is allowed to become impure, become Tamei, for a relative that dies, so I would think that this would also be an exceptional case, that for a relative of a Kohen, he could also cut a gash in their skin and make a bald spot and do all that. So the Torah says, even Kohanim, even though for parents and relatives there's an exceptional law by a Kohen that they become Tamei, even though normally they can't, but nevertheless, as far as bald spots and gushing their skin and all that, it's forbidden for a Kohen regardless. And the Mefarshim say that if a Kohen does do it, he is not allowed to work on the Beis HaMikdash until it's healed. Till the bald spot becomes unbalded, and the scratch of the skin becomes healed, and until then he's not allowed to work on the Beis HaMikdash. But it's actually a negative commandment. Really, it applies to all people. Obviously, it says like this. This is only what they used to do with the sharp blade, the galechomein, actually with a razor, which would be forbidden. But again, it's forbidden for any person to do it.
Rabbi,
yeah.
An injured kohen could work in Beit HaMikdash.
When we finish these few pages, the Torah then is going to discuss all the blemishes of a Kohen, which disqualifies him from working in the Beis HaMikdash. So, I mean, a little scratch is not going to do it. Unless if he did it for a dead body, then he's punished. No, because he went against the Torah, so he can't do it. The Torah is going to discuss all the blemishes, all the mumim of a Kohen. And the Rambam says there's something like 50 blemishes at a Kohen, which disqualifies a Kohen from working on the Mizbeach. And what the Kohenim that had blemishes would do, like we learned, they had to check the wood that they used for the Mizbeach was not allowed to have any worms in it. So all the blemished Kohenim would sit a whole day when it was their shift, and they'd look through the wood and make sure there are no worms, because they weren't allowed to work on the Mizbeach. That means a kosher Kohen, the kosher Kohen, but he had a blemish. And there's two types of blemishes. There's temporary blemish, that he cannot work as long as the blemish is there. Then there's a permanent blemish, and so on. So all those things, but a little cut is not going to disqualify him.
Yeah, they were dealing with knives.
No, that's what I'm saying. If they cut themselves, it wasn't...
It's with the worms from the walls? From the...
In the wood.
In the Beit HaMikdash? Where? From which wood?
The firewood.
The firewood for the Mizbeah.
The firewood.
That's why a certain time of the year they stopped cutting the wood, because then it would have worms and they weren't allowed to use it. But the Kohenim that have blemishes would actually go looking through the wood. Okay. Kodesh Shem Yila Lekehem. Pasuk Vav. They shall be holy to their God. And therefore they should not desecrate Shem Elokim, the name of Hashem, meaning by impurifying themselves, becoming tummy, and so on and so forth. But the Pasuk says, Kadeshim Tihiyu, that not only that, Kadeshim Tihiyu means it's a mitzvah that they should be holy. Meaning, as Rashi quotes in the Medrash, what happens if a guy says, you know what, I don't want to be a Kohen? A Kohen says, you know, I don't want to be a Kohen, and I want to go to the cemeteries. It says, Kadeshim Tihiyu, it's a mitzvah on the courts to enforce that it's not up to them. If they're a Kohen, you can't give it up. You know, you can't do anything with that. So they have to be actually, but then the Mefarshim say another thing. It says, Kadeshim Yiyu Lelokehem. What's wrong with the word Kadeshim Yiyu? They should be holy. Why does it say for their God? So the Mefarshim explain that they have to do so for the sake of God, not for themselves. Kohenim have to feel that their kedusha is to serve Hashem. And if they do it for themselves, they are actually desecrating the name of Hashem. Because the pasuk says, Kadeshim Tiyul Elokeihem, you have to be holy for the sake of Hashem. And then the pasuk concludes, as it says at the end of Vahayu Kadesh, then they will remain holy. You know, if you do it for the right purposes, Hashem will keep the holiness within you. Okay, so it says like this, Kadeshim Tiyul Elokeihem, you have to be holy. They cannot desecrate the name of Hashem, meaning they cannot resign their positions. Ki es ishei Hashem, because the fire offerings of Hashem, lechem alakeim, the bread of their God, hey makrivim, they are offering, meaning they have a holy job to do it. V'hoyu kedush, and therefore they need to be holy. Okay, so there's a positive mitzvah. The kedim need to act in a specific manner of being holy. And he cannot give it up, he cannot, you know, resign, so to speak, from being a Kohen. Now, there's a very interesting argument in the Gemara. Whose representatives are the Kohenim? Are they Shlucha de Rachamana or Shlucha de Dan? Are they the Jews, Shluchim? And that's what they're working for. Are they working for God? Or they're working for the Jews. Whose representatives are there? And there's two opinions in the Gemara. And in a certain sense, they're both right. They're representing the Jews. They're representing Hashem. Because they're, like he says, they are bringing lechem alakeim, the food of Hashem. And obviously, it doesn't mean, in a literal sense, the food, because Hashem doesn't eat the korbanos. It means what satisfies Hashem, that people are doing, like we learned before, the beginning of Ayur Kishamartiv and Asar Tzaini, that Hashem says, I'm telling him to do it, and they do it. So therefore the Jews are actually representing Hashem. They're bringing the food of God, and therefore they must remain Kodesh. They have to remain holy. It's not up to them to give it up or not to give it up. Because once you're born a Kohen, if you don't have a blemish, you're stuck. By the way, even a blemished Kohen is still not allowed to become Tamei. Even a Kohen who married somebody who's desecrated still cannot become Tamei. He doesn't have the rights of a Kohen. Like we learned, if a Kohen marries a divorcee, he cannot be called up to Kohen Aliyah, he cannot do Bechat Kohanim, he doesn't get Truma, he loses all the rights that a Kohen gets. But he's still not allowed to desecrate, he still can't go to funerals and say, well, I'm not a Kohen anymore anyway, I can, you know, go do whatever I want. That he's not allowed to do. But the rights of a Kohen that he loses. And if a Jew eats chazer, what happens?
He gets luscious.
The Kohen got malchus. If a Kohen went into the cemetery, he got whipped. And not only that, in Rambam, means on the halachas in the Gemara, obviously, that if a Kohen realizes he's in the cemetery, and he goes out a longer way than rather than the shorter way, he also gets whipped. And if a Kohen stays there when he could go out, I mean, sometimes a Kohen can get numerous times, not numerous lashes, but numerous times lashes for staying in there and not going out and not behaving properly. And again, this only applies to male Kohen and not to female Kohen. What?
Who gives them the lashes?
Destin. Uh-huh. What do you think?
Who? I don't
know. Courts.
The holy people.
They need to be warned. They need to be this.
They need to be warned like any other punishment. But there was one. What does it say? If I'm not mistaken, the Rambam says, that a Kohen who was Tomei and worked in the Beis Hamikdash, his colleague Kohenim took him out and cracked his head open. They literally killed him. Because the punishment of a Kohen that works when he's tummy intentionally is the death penalty. Mm-hmm. But they would do it. They wouldn't even wait for the court. They would just do it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Is that a woman Kohen?
No, women Kohenim didn't work in the Beis Hamikdash. Sorry.
The family.
Yeah. The family could be, a woman could become tummy. A woman Kohen. Okay, Pasuk Zayin. These are the women, and this you could spend a long time discussing if you want, which women a Kohen is not allowed to marry. And we're speaking about a regular Kohen, not a Kohen Gadol. Isha Zayna v'chalala lo yikachu. A woman who is a Zayna will see. A Zayna literally is translated as a harlot, but that's not what it means here. V'chalala, or a woman who has been desecrated, and I'll explain what that means. Lo yikachu, he cannot marry. V'isha grusha me'isha lo yikachu. And a woman who's divorced from her husband, he also cannot take. Ki kadesh shula likov, because he is holy for God. So basically, who is the Torah forbidding a Kohen to marry? A Zayna, and a Chalala, and a Grusha. We'll see in a second. But don't say these three women. Zayna, Chalala, and Grusha. These are the three. In fact, it's very interesting. You know, there's a very prominent Sephardic last name called Azulai. Mm-hmm. The Azulai family. Mm-hmm. It's a very prominent, there have been thousands of them. Where does that name Azulai come from? It comes from this pasuk. There are Kayanim. And it says, look, Azulai is the acronym for Isha Zona V'chalala Lo Yikochu.
So he's a Kohen, right?
So Azulai is officially, now who knows what, but I'm saying, officially the original Azulai's family was Kohenim because it's a Rosh Tevis for Isha, Zayna, V'chalala, Lo Yikachu. The first letters spells out Azulai.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, no, Azul, Ayin, Zayin, Vav, Lamed, Yud. Okay, what is the definition of a Zayna? A Zayna means a woman who lived with somebody she would not be allowed to marry. It doesn't mean a Zayna prostitute. It doesn't mean a harlot. It means a woman. This is the way Chazal defined it. A woman who lived with a man that she would not be allowed to marry.
Like a goy?
For instance. One second. And by the way, even if it wasn't willingly, if God forbid it was a rape, forced, a woman who had relations with somebody she would not be allowed to marry, and we're going to discuss which ones, she is not allowed to marry a Kohen. Okay? Now, for instance, a woman that had relations with a non-Jew, she's not allowed to marry a non-Jew. The second she had relations with a non-Jew, even once, she is forbidden to marry a Kohen forever. A woman who had an incestuous relations, brother, so again, somebody would not be allowed to marry her. If it was incest with the father, a brother, whatever it would be, okay, that woman, a nephew with an aunt, you know, all the forbidden ones that the Torah forbids, all those women are not allowed to marry a Kohen. If a woman, see, a Kohen Gadol has to marry a virgin, like we'll soon learn. But a regular Kohen doesn't have to marry a virgin, a psula, as long as the psula, I mean, it's not psula, as long as the girl to not have relations with somebody she would be forbidden to marry. For instance, if a woman had relations with another Jewish man, just, you know, that woman is not a Zayna in a way that he cannot marry her. A Kohen would be allowed to marry such a woman. But if it happened once with somebody that he's not allowed to marry, so then she remains a Zayna forever. The problem, by the way, with this concept is that God forbid that if a woman was married to a Kohen already, let's say was raped by a non-Jew, technically she has to divorce herself from her husband. She cannot stay married anymore to the husband because now she became a Zayna. That's the halach. It's very sad, but that is the halach. So that's the definition of Zayna. I'm saying what Zayna is. First one, Zayna is a woman that had relations with somebody she'd not be allowed to marry, and therefore the Kohen, like we said, if a woman in practical world today, a girl that had relations with a non-Jew cannot marry a Kohen. Okay, Chalala, is a woman who was desecrated, so to speak. What does chalala means? A woman who, for instance, if a kohen lived with a divorcee, she cannot marry a kohen now. Let's say a kohen lived with a divorcee and they had a daughter. That daughter is called a chalala. So if a kohen was married to a woman he's not allowed to be married to, and they have a daughter, that daughter cannot.
Cannot marry a
kohen. Cannot marry a kohen. What?
The daughter is called chalala and the woman is called
Israel.
She can marry a Levi, Yisrael, she just cannot marry a kohen, that's all. For instance, a divorcee, well, she can't marry a kohen anyway, but a divorcee who, it goes even more. If a kohen gadol lived with a widow, it's funny because a kohen gadol is a very holy guy. A kohen gadol cannot marry a widow. Right? A regular kohen could marry a widow. Kohen Gadol cannot marry a widow. He can only marry a virgin. So what happens if a Kohen Gadol lived with a widow? She cannot marry a Kohen. Because she lived with somebody she wouldn't be allowed to marry. Because a Kohen Gadol can't marry. So she becomes a Chalala. The daughters that they have from that marriage is also forbidden. So friends, if you have a Kohen who's married a divorcee, right? So then the din is their daughter cannot marry a Kohen.
The woman,
Huh? I'm saying the halala is even the kid.
Yeah, but what with the mother in that situation, he also is called the halala.
Yeah, sometimes you can have a halala and a zayna together.
Okay.
But for instance, a kohen cannot marry a geyeris. A kohen cannot marry a convert. Because the fact that she, at one time she was not Jewish, so that already renders her the concept of Zayna in that respect, because he would not be allowed to marry her when she was before conversion, and therefore a Kohen cannot marry Geyeris. But again, in these cases, though, if he did, she's still a married woman. But they have an obligation to divorce.
If Kohen Gadol is every relationship with a divorcee,
mm-hmm.
So the daughter is a halala, and the son is a halal, right?
Right.
So that son is a halal, what could he do, what could he not do? He's a halal.
He's not a kohen.
He's not a kohen.
If a man...
He's a kohen, but he is...
A kohen...
He's not being called for kohen.
If a kohen is married to a divorcee, or a convert... All these people he's not allowed to marry. Let's be even a regular kohen. If a regular kohen is married to a woman, he's not allowed to marry because he's a kohen. Right? And they have a kid, a boy. That boy is a cholol. A cholol means he is a complete non-kohen. He can go to cemeteries. He obviously doesn't get the first aliyahs. He doesn't get any. The bottom line is he's completely an un-kohen. He can go to cemetery, he's not a kohen.
Could he marry a bat kohen?
Can he marry a bat kohen? No. A cholol, one second, a cholol could marry a bat kohen. Yeah.
But you're just saying if he loses his benefits, he still have...
No, I'm talking about the kohen himself, here we're talking about his kid. If a kohen himself marries a divorcee,
yeah.
Even though he doesn't get aliyah's kohen and that, but he cannot go to cemeteries.
Oh, no, the halala.
If they have a son,
he's blemished.
He's not a kohen.
He's unkohen.
He's unkohen completely. The father cannot go to the cemetery. The son could.
So the son becomes like Israel.
Right. Now there are cases in halacha, but this is already more detailed, and this is just for discussion only. That what happens if a kohen marries a divorcee, and he does tshuva, and he divorces, Brilliant minds think alike. And the Kohen divorces her and makes like a public neder that he will never do Zaveda again. In many cases, he can get back to Kohuna. Right, I'm saying. The kids that are born already are too late. What's done is done. You can't undo the done. You can't undo a mamzer. If a kid's a mam... But by the way, in all these cases, the kid's not a mamzer. Because the marriage is binding. Okay? There's another person that Shulchan Aruch says that a kohen cannot marry. But that, it says like this, is only lechatchila cannot marry her. But if they didn't know and they got married, they can stay married. And that is a woman whose father is not Jewish. A girl whose father is not Jewish, the mother's Jewish, so she's 100% Jewish, she cannot marry a kohen. It's called a blemish. She cannot marry a kohen. But if they did get married, let's say they did know whatever it was, somebody didn't know, you're not allowed to do it, and they did the chasana, they don't have to divorce. All these other cases, the kohen technically would have to divorce.
Does being married to her, though, affect the status of the children?
No. The kids are 100% kohenim. It's only like lechatchila, it's preferred that he doesn't marry a girl his father is a guy, because there's... It's not a perfect coming from both parents who are Jewish as far as the kohen goes. From both parents. If the mother's not Jewish, she can't marry a kohen anyway. She can't marry anybody. What? Oh, okay. So Torah says like this. Isha zayna v'chalala layikachu. A woman who's a zayna, and we discussed what a zayna is. Or a chalala layikachu cannot take. V'isha grusha me'isha layikachu. And a woman who's divorced from her husband, he also cannot marry. So the question is, who else would she be divorced from? I mean, well, in the old, nowadays it's maybe from their kids. But the Torah says, Isha Grusha, a divorcee. So obviously it's Me'isha from her husband. So why is the Torah saying Grusha Me'isha? So you say like this, the Medrash says, it's speaking about a unique case. A Kohen got lost. Kohen was married. You know, in the olden times, they had the people, they got lost. They ran away, left. They didn't come back. There was no internet. There was no telephones. There was no nothing. And based on the testimony of two witnesses, the woman was allowed to remarry. But she didn't remarry. And the husband came back. But meanwhile, she didn't marry another man. She just accepted kedushin from the other man. Today we all do it under the chuppah. Years ago they did it 12 months earlier, right? So a woman whose husband is missing in action, a kohen, and Bezdin ruled, there's a testimony the husband died, she couldn't remarry. So she gets kedushin from another man. She doesn't live with him, she doesn't marry him, but she takes kedushin, okay? And then the husband comes back. So the din is, that woman, even though technically she's divorced from the second guy who gave her the ring, but it's not really a divorce. Because now that she's the married woman, the second kedushin is completely invalid. If you come over to a married woman, not you, if a man comes over to a married woman and gives her a ring and says, "Areyat mukadeshesli," it's worthless. She doesn't need to get from the second guy, because the kedushin is invalid, because she still has a husband, right? This husband was still alive. They didn't know about it, but the husband was still alive. So now it shows that the second kedushin that the second guy gave to her is worthless. So it says she can still go back to the husband, because she's not divorced from the husband yet.
I guess you put the ring.
Yeah, a Jew would ask that question, yeah.
She has to.
No, it's a technical question.
It depends.
we learned it about the sister. I'm going to give it to the sister.
Depends on what it's worth.
Let me give you. Can I rephrase your question to make it much more relevant and practical? Okay? If a couple is engaged, not married, they're engaged, today's engagements, and before the wedding, one of them breaks it off. Now, along the way, they gave gifts to each other. Do you have to give them back?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
They grab it. They take it. They
excuse
force
me, I asked
to
that
give
question.
It back.
No, you asked if you got to give back the ring.
Same thing.
Yeah, but how many times is a kohen missing in action, and then the guy, Beis Din rules that he can marry, and somebody gives a kedushin, and then the husband comes back. That doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. Almost as often as Eliyahu HaNavi coming back.
Enough.
Right, no, but the Torah is teaching us that if, because there's a very interesting thing. Let's talk, because it's such relevance today and such a dominating problem that exists today.
Was the divorce?
In Halacha it says like this. Even a woman that was called a reach haget, even she needed like what's called the smell of a get. It wasn't even necessarily a necessary get, but it was given for whatever reason it is, you know, that woman can also not marry a kohen. Okay? So now, let me give you scenarios that happen, whoever deals in the halachic world, in today's world, literally many, 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 many cases. A woman, man and woman, not from. Okay, they get married. Not a conservative chuppah, reform chuppah, civil marriage. Okay, they never had a proper chuppah. They never had witnesses, kedusha. They didn't have the proper chuppah. Now they split up. Does that woman need a get or not? Okay, so does the woman need a get or not? They're living, they're married 5 years, 10 years, okay? Then they split. Or reform or conservative without any kosher to witnesses, right? Now the question is, does that woman need a get?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
The yeshiva is in a disagreement.
Everyone is right.
The scholars of this yeshiva. Okay, so the din is, lechatchila, that means initially to begin with, the proper way is, if they live together, not as boyfriend, girlfriend, they live together as Mr. and Mrs., okay? Even though they didn't live in a frum neighborhood. See, if they, also another issue is, what happens if they live in a frum neighborhood? So they had a non-religious wedding, but they live in a frum neighborhood where frum people, okay, know them as Mr. and Mrs. And they see them going into the house together as Mr. and Mrs. That's also a problem because that may be a din of kosher witnesses testifying that they're Mr. and Mrs. Okay? That is an issue for itself. But let's say that also doesn't exist. So now the question is, does this woman need a get? So many Rabbanim will say like this. The best thing, ideally, they should get a get. Why? Yeah, no kosher witness. But the bottom line is, they live together as Mr. and Mrs. They live together as husband and wife. Even the rabbi, the lady rabbi, pronounced them husband and wife. Or Mr. and Mr. Or Mrs. and Mrs. Okay? So, the bottom line is, many Rabbanim write, they should need a get. What happens if they didn't? And they split and they married other people? So they'll say the kid's not mamzedim because they never had a kosher wedding to begin with, so she was never a married woman, so it's not adultery because, you know, whatever. Fine. So many times they'll say this woman needs a get. The problem is she wants to marry a kohen. Now, if she gets a get, she can't marry a kohen because she divorced. Maybe she doesn't need it, but there's definitely a get. There's definitely what's called reyach get. There's definitely more than just the smell of a get. They actually got a get. Maybe she didn't need it, right? Maybe she didn't need it, but if she got it, then she has a din of a divorcee. Can this woman now marry a kohen? No. What happens though if she doesn't get a get? She never lived with a goy. She lived with a Jew. She lived with a guy that technically she could marry. Right? So now, sometimes, what happens if this woman is now going out with a kohen? So, you need a rav that's going to rule, a rav that does gittin and this type of stuff, to rule she doesn't need a get. Because if she needs a get, she can't marry the kohen. If she doesn't need a get, then she was never any part of a divorcee whatsoever, and therefore she would be allowed to marry the kohen. Okay? But these are issues that come up on a continuous basis. Parenthetically, this is also a shalat that comes up very often. Someone just asked me about this the other day. They have relatives, and I'll show you the way all these things are so complicated. They have relatives that are having, let's say, a conservative reform wedding. Okay? But the question is like this. Should they try to see that the witnesses at least are kosher? I know. So they see at least, try to see that the witnesses should be kosher. They say, oh, at least, you know, there'll be a kosher wedding, so to speak. They'll have two kosher witnesses. It sounds very good, but from the other side, there's a problem with that. Because 10 years down the line when they get divorced, 50% of the divorce rate, if not more. So 10 years from now, when they will get divorced, and let's say they're not from, so they won't get a get. So rabbi says, who married you? Reform rabbi. So he said, okay, you won't need a get. Right? But if you have two kosher witnesses, then she's mamasha, a married woman, and she would need a get. So if this woman marries another guy without a get, see what's going to happen 10 years from now? The rabbi is going to, let's say, rabbi is going to ask, who did the wedding? Reform rabbi. They're not going to remember that they had two kosher witnesses. They're not going to remember that. They're just going to say, we had a reform wedding. Correct? So what's the problem? If you're going to have kosher witnesses, they will need a real get, and they won't go for a real get, and you'll have a problem of a mamzer, you'll have a problem of HSC, you'll have a problem with all the difficulties that exist. But anyway, as coming back to the get story, a woman that would need a get would not be allowed to marry a kohen. If she doesn't need a get, and she lived with a Jewish guy, then she won't. Then she won't need a get, and then she technically could marry a kohen. What?
What about
it's reform? I don't like to use the word reform. I shouldn't have used it. Kosher, not kosher wedding.
Non-kosher. And the two witnesses are kosher, and then the husband dies.
So she's a widow.
Widow, but like she can marry freely a
kohen
after?
A widow can marry a kohen.
Okay.
Unless, if she was with a guy sometime or whatever, you know.
No.
I'm saying, but if not, yeah, she can marry, she's a widow. Okay. By the way, a divorcee that became a widow can also not marry a kohen, because she was still a divorcee. So she married one man and divorced her. Then
she married
that guy, she killed him. So now she's a widow. Now she's a widow. What? That happens.
He died.
Listen to the news.
Rabbi.
What?
So, what if there's a non-kosher wedding and they divorce, but it wasn't, and she does the tshuva, so she's still okay with the kohen?
She married a guy and she did tshuva? And?
witnesses and not a wedding.
No. Again, if she needs a get, then she can't marry a kohen. If she doesn't need a get, then she could.
But if she goes to, if she knows she wants to marry the kohen, if she goes to a rav, and the rav will paskin leniently, or whatever, that she doesn't need a get, then she can marry him.
Right. But if the rav paskins that she doesn't need a get, then she can marry a kohen. Or you have many times, there were cases that a non-from couple got married, okay? He was a kohen, she was a divorcee, then they became from. There's many cases like this around the world today. And then they become from, okay? And then they realized that she was a divorcee. So, like, what do you do? So the truth is, they have to divorce. What happens when? Yeah. What happened? I'll give you another scenario. What happened? That also happens. A kohen. What happens if a kohen married a woman? Okay, and afterwards she didn't know anything. She didn't know anything laws in. Then she goes to a class and she hears that a woman who's with a guy cannot marry a kohen. It happened in this shul. By one of these classes, by the way. Anyway, so the woman hears that. anyway, I don't want to tell the story, but then the woman says, "Oy vey, I was with a guy before we got married." Huh? No. So the din is she's not believed. Then she's not believed. In other words, if she said to him before they got married, then she cannot marry him. Once they got married,
with a kohen,
and then the woman comes along and says to him, "By the way, I am not allowed to stay married to you because I was with a guy." The din is she is not believed. Why? Listen to this. The Gemara says she not believed. Why? Listen to this reason. Maybe she fell in love with another man, and she's trying to find an excuse to divorce her. So therefore, she's not. This is what the Gemara says. That's the halacha. By the way, this is done in very, very practical halacha. There's once a story like this, and the guy came to me. He calls me up the next day. He's frantic. He went home and said to his wife, "Were you ever with a guy?" She said, "Yeah." So he freaked out, calls me emergency the next day. Emergency. I got to see it right now. You know. He came and he says, "What's the problem?" So he says, "Hey, I went home, I asked my wife." She said, "Yeah, she was with a guy." I said, "Okay, no problem." So, anyway, I said to him, "She's not believed to say it." And that's it. And they stay married.
But what if they knew the halakhas beforehand, but they weren't really so firm? So they went ahead and got married anyway, and it turned out to be a kosher wedding. But they both knew beforehand that halakha.
Again. Let me ask you a different question. You know what the big problem in today's world is? Believe it or not. And it's not so simple in halacha. And there's, as everything else, there are different opinions today in halacha. A kohen comes to you with a girl. They want to get married. Both Jewish, wonderful people, no divorce. Okay? Do I have to ask her, were you ever with a guy?
I guess that is the question that I should be asking.
Well, the question is... See, we have an argument amongst...
Don't ask, don't tell kind of thing.
So, 1 minute. Some people... Years ago, this issue wasn't so important, okay? But in today's world, okay, it's coming with a girl's a Baal Tshuva, not a FFBs, okay? Who knows what they did. Yeah. But I'm saying, Baal Tshuva... No difference today. No difference today. So, is the rabbi obligated to ask her you know, will you have it with a guy? Because if she says yes, goodbye. So that's what I'm saying. This is a big question, which is discussed in the contemporary halachic world. Some poskim write, don't ask, don't tell. And some poskim say, what do you mean, don't ask, don't tell? I get a lot of calls from girls. I don't know who they are. I need to know if I can marry a kohen or not. This is what they're called. They don't, you know, I need to know. You have to tell me, am I allowed to marry a kohen or not? So I say to them, listen, I'm going to tell you who could and who can't. Okay? I'm not going to ask her, excuse me, were you with a guy? I'm not going to say that. Okay? So I'm going to tell her like this. You know who cannot marry a kohen? Let me tell you. A divorcee. A woman had relations with a non-Jew. Any woman that had incestuous relations. Okay? And a girl whose father is not Jewish. This is what I tell him on the phone. I said, now the rest is up to you. Have a nice day. But they're not coming to me to get married. She's just asking me, Ashayla, is she kosher for a kohen or not?
And if they come to you to marry them, you ask them that question?
I'll ask you what I should tell them. You know what I'm telling you to me? Don't ask, don't tell. But it's a very big problem today. You know, in today's world, an older man, kohen, has a very big problem. Because they're either divorced, or girls that were on, you know, Bali Chuvas in campuses, who knows what they did. You know?
We don't have a kohen gadolim.
Yeah.
Are there many
kohen? There's a lot, a bunch of kohen, you know, relatively speaking.
Rabbi, what? For a woman who's been with a kohen, where's, is that just an implied halacha from somewhere else?
No, that's the definition of a zayna.
No, but where is it? It's not specifically written in the Torah anywhere that a woman cannot be with a non-Jew.
Sure it says.
Where? That's what I'm asking you. Where does it specifically state that?
Because it's forbidden biblically for a Jew to marry a non-Jew. Or to have relations.
Okay, so that's applicable to male and
female. Male and female, sure. If a man, you know the Pinchas story? Everybody knows the Pinchas story. That was Abayel Aram is Kanoim Paganbay. Bezdin can't kill them. But the zealous person could kill them while they're in the middle of the act, like Pinchas did. But it's a very, very big problem, you know. How do you, what do you do with these people?
So if they're about to get married, a kohen and a woman who's into the god, and the end of the chuppah, and someone suddenly comes and says, oh, I know she went to the god. So what do? Break everything? It happened. I know the story.
And what did they do?
They got married still.
Because the witness was considered to be a liar. In the moment,
the
witness was jealous.
No, she said a witness came and said that this lady was with a guy.
Was the witness related?
No. It's not really exact. I dramatized it. It was happening. They were about to get married, like in the month. And there was a rabbi who was reading in the mezuzah and he said, she can't marry you, she went to the goy. And then he confronted her and she said, yes, I did.
That was before they got married?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they still got married.
But it wasn't a case, because what they do many times today, many times today in those cases, they will disqualify the man from being a kohen.
Yeah.
Because they will ask, they will ask the guy, this is what's done by the way, and people tried, but you have the problem is, when the guy says, no, I don't want to give up my kahuna. You know, I don't want to disqualify me, I want to be a kohen. You know, you can't have both things. You can't have the cake and eat it too, right? But the question is, many times, they will disqualify the kohen. How? Sometimes they'll do research. First of all, how do you know he's a kohen? His father said so. His father's not religious. How does he know if he's a kohen or not? Okay? Because a guy's name is Cohen doesn't mean he's a Cohen necessarily. Right? It says in Halacha, sometimes on the tombstones of a Cohen, you know, they put this hand sign, you know, that the Cohen do. It says in Halacha that that's also not a proof that somebody's a Cohen. If it says in somebody's tombstone, HaKohen, in Halacha, it's not necessarily, that alone is not a proof that the man is a Cohen. Because there could be a lot of ignorances.
So what is Cohen?
Yeah.
I know a lady that was divorced, got married with a Cohen, and two kids, got divorced, got married with another
Cohen. No? And she had another two kids.
And she got divorced from another
happily ever after.
At least she didn't kill him.
So what is considered proof? I mean, if like say like for instance, my father says that my it was passed down from him from his grandfather to his father to my father that they're all Kohanim. I mean, if it's just family.
The question is, what happens if they do research and they find out that the woman, the mother, the father married a woman that wasn't kosher for a kohen. I mean, but sometimes it can get dirty and people don't want to dig up the. I mean, it's a very, very complicated issue, this whole thing. This pasuk makes a lot of problems for a lot of people.
But in general, someone is presumed to be a kohen if they.
The poskim
family. Yeah. It could be a lot of problems. Correct. Okay. Then it says like this, V'kidashtoi Pasuk Ches. You have to sanctify him. And this is a mitzvah, by the way, of giving the Kayanim, you know, first Taliyah, first this, first that, Kayan first, to lead the benching. You know, these are all the things of a Kayanim. V'kidashtoi, you have to sanctify him. K'eslechem alekechum akiv, because again, he brings the food for Hashem. Kaddish Yalach, he has to be holy to you. Ki Kaddish Ani Hashem Kaddishchem, because I am God that makes you holy. So basically, the Torah says this is the mitzvah, like Rashi says in the Gemara, that you need to make the Kohen first. Now, there's a very interesting halacha. There's a pasuk that says, Yukadahi Mipninim. Simply means Torah is more precious than pearls. But the Gemara learns, Yukadihi mipninim means Torah is more precious even than a Kohen Gadol who goes into the Pnim, into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. A Torah is even more precious than a Kohen Gadol that goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Because of that, there's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Talmud Chacham Mamzer Kedem LeKohen Gadol Am Haaretz. That a Talmud Chacham, a scholar, even if he's a mamzer, a Jewish mamzer, a real mamzer, not what we call him a mamzer, they're actually a mamzer, has precedence over a Kohen Gadol who's an illiterate. That means technically, according to that Mishnah, by the way, that Mishnah Halacha is saying that if you have a scholar in a shul and a Kohen who's an illiterate, the scholar comes first. You give the first aliyah to the scholar, not to the Kohen. In later halacha, it says, it's not done today, because you can imagine who's going to start fighting, who's a bigger scholar. So the minig is today, Kohenim first, then Levi, then Yisrael, you know. But technically, the Mishnah says that a Kohen Gadol, who is an Am Haaretz, comes after a Talmud Chacham, even if he's a Mamzer. But here there's a mitzvah in the Torah, V'kidashti, he has to be first. Meaning, Torah first choice in benching after a meal, you know, first choice in whatever it is, Kohen comes first. That's what the Torah says. And the Torah says, Kodesh Yalach, he has to be holy, ki ani Hashem kadesh chamam Hashem to make you holy. Okay, vasish Kohen ki seichel iznis. If a daughter of a Kohen desecrates herself through adultery, meaning, this is not a single Bas Kohen, a married Bas Kohen who commits adultery. Now normally, the punishment for adultery is chenek, choking. Here there's Xerif Sarkasa, the Torah says, that the daughter of a Kohen that committed adultery, she gets burnt. The man that committed adultery with it gets chenek, choking, as capital punishment. she gets burnt.
How would they accomplish that? Like,
what they wanted to do, Tamar? Yeah, they wanted to do Tamar. And Rashi says, because she was Bita Shel Shem, the daughter of Shem, some people say granddaughter of Shem, who was a Kohen, like you guys were talking before, and therefore, why did Yehuda say to Tamar, take her out and let her burn? So Rashi says, from the Befrei Mekushal, that she was the daughter of Shem, who's Malki Tzedek in this last week's parsha, Kohen Lekel Elyon. So therefore, she was a Bas Kohen, she needed to get burnt based on this pasuk. But she desecrates her father's honor, and therefore Rashi says people have to say, cursed is the one that gave birth to her, so therefore she's defiling the father, so to speak, as a Kohen, and therefore there's exercise causes that her punishment is burning rather than chenek, rather than choking.
What happens if the daughter is alive? The father?
Then she doesn't get burned.
No?
Then she doesn't get burned. Then she gets... Again, this is only adultery that she becomes married.
Right.
And she willingly commits adultery.
But if somebody willingly commits adultery,
then they get choked. Chenek.
Israelite?
Yeah. The man and the woman that committed adultery, their punishment biblically is chenek, choking.
This is an old time. Now.
No, now we don't have the courts to give it.
So who would actually, from calling Israel, who would actually carry out these things?
Then or now?
Then.
Besdin.
No, I understand the Besdin, but somebody from the Besdin would actually do the act of choking? Or
sure.
Well, we don't have executioners.
They had executioners.
But you never really... Yeah.
Once in 7 years, 70 years, whatever. But it happened.
Is there someone who says no?
I mean, do they would keep the person's like identity like from the...
No, everybody had to see
everybody
it.
Everybody knew who it was, the executioner?
Sure.
That's messed up.
Why?
I wouldn't want people to know, like, that...
They worked for Besdin. They worked for Besdin. It wasn't them. Listen, today in the courts when they do lethal injection and kill somebody, nobody has any complaints to the guy that did it, to the executioner. It's not him. He's just doing what his job is. The courts say, do what he does it. The guy that gave lashes, Besdin, he was a worker of Besdin. He got paid by Besdin.
Yeah, but you don't get lethal injection for adultery.
Well, in those days, it was similar to lethal injection.